Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and a quick reminder that you still have time to enter our Uncommon Economic Indicators video contest. Post your video of 2 minutes or less of an uncommon economic indicator in your neighborhood. It can be raw footage. It can be very lightly produced. And we will pick some winning videos to screen before a live audience at the WNYC Jerome L. Green Performance Space. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show to see how to enter our uncommon economic indicators. I've only said that a million times in the last 6 months. Video contest at WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. All right, what's happening in Iran? What is happening in Iran today with the democracy movement there? We have two guests to talk about this, but I want to play a couple of clips first of President Obama and the man who ran against him for president last year, John McCain. Here is the president being very cautious in his language yesterday.
How that plays out over the next several days and several weeks is something ultimately for the Iranian people to decide. But I stand strongly with the universal principle that people's voices should be heard and not suppressed.
So that's President Obama. That was not strong enough for John McCain.
He should speak out that this is a corrupt, flawed sham of an election. The Iranian people have been deprived of their rights. We support them in their struggle against a repressive, oppressive regime, and they should not be subjected to 4 more years of Ahmadinejad and the radical Muslim clerics.
So, what's happening in Iran? There's also interesting developments with respect to Twitter and how people can help in this country by registering as if you were in Tehran. You register your time zone as the Tehran time zone, and that'll help confuse the authorities there who don't want to allow freedom of speech online right now as to who is really posting and where they are really from. So we have two guests right now, Nazila Fati, New York Times reporter, who has been covering this in Tehran, and Farida Kuhi Kamali, editorial director of the scholarly program at Palgrave Macmillan and professor of Middle East politics and history at the New School. She contributed to the book The Kurds, Contemporary Overview and Stories by Iranian Women Since the Revolution. Farida and Nazila, welcome to WNYC. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Nazila, where are you right now? Are you in Iran?
I am in Tehran right now.
We've been hearing about members of the Western media having their visas revoked or allowed to expire and being kicked out of the country. We had a report from NPR's Mike Schuster yesterday who's been there saying he's being forced to leave. Are you?
Unfortunately, that is true, but I live in Iran, and I have a permit to work here throughout the year. What happened was that people who were here on press visas, they were forced to leave the country or their press cards have been revoked. The government has asked us not to participate in the rallies or cover events that do not have permission from the government, and that includes even press conferences linked to Mr. Mousavi. And in fact, there is another rally going on in central Tehran right now, but because the government urged us not to go for our own safety, that's what they told us, because one photographer was stabbed yesterday, we decided to stay. I'm at my office right now.
So the New York Times currently has no way of reporting on the demonstrations in Tehran?
Well, hopefully there are people, protesters, who went there, and they have said that they will call us and tell us what has happened.
And Farida Kuhi Kamali, from the word that you're hearing, and you're aware, you're here in New York?
Yes.
What is your understanding of what's happening today? Is it just a stalemate of protests and government stonewalling, or is the story moving forward in terms of how this will be resolved?
I mean, it's kind of hard to say where this would go eventually, but it is interesting to see it in I see it as very much a continuation of 1979 revolution, a continuation in the sense that there was a promises of democracy and never delivered. So this is within that context, I think. And when you listen to the slogans people are giving, it's they're demanding their rights, as if there is a sense of entitlement in what they are saying, that it was ours. And based on the law of the land and the constitution law. So it is a very interesting one to watch, whether this, and also it's interesting to note that at least so far, people are not asking for change of regime, whether that will come eventually or not, we don't know yet. But it is very much seems as if they would be satisfied with the reform from within and just respecting their votes.
Farida, did you say that the 1979 revolution, 30 years ago this year, with the Ayatollah Khomeini, mm-hmm. was making promises of democratic reform, because he seemed to be for anything but once he was in power?
Well, the thing is that we shouldn't forget that the Iranian Revolution of 1979 did not start on a religious note. It was all sorts of political groups from quite a few, actually, from the left, because that is the tradition of the Third World Movement, opposition movement.
Against the autocracy of the Shah at that
exactly.
time.
Exactly. So they were everybody was in it. But later on, it's a long discussion why yes. the religious leaders managed to grab the leadership. But that came later. It wasn't to begin with. And it was based on the promises of democracy and freedom and people's vote. And Khomeini, as a matter of fact, is interesting. He repeatedly emphasized that the governments, the legitimacy of the government would be judged by people's vote. So this new generation of the last 30 years have grown up with that language, and they're expecting it. As I said, there's a sense of entitlement in there.
Nazila Fati from the New York Times. I understand that Mr. Mousavi and his supporters now say a recount is not good enough. They want a whole new election. Is that their position explicitly, and is there any chance of that?
Yes, that has been their position until yesterday, because they have said that there have been a lot of irregularities during the vote on Friday. They have made examples that, for example, in some areas there were more votes in the ballot boxes than the population in those areas. Or, for example, they are not sure about what happened to the mobile ballot boxes. Until yesterday, even after the Supreme Religious Leader said that they could have supervisors during the recount, that was their position, that they wanted a new election to be held.
And is there any chance of that, or where does this have to go? Is this going to be a stalemate that ultimately fizzles out like it did in 1999 and 2003?
Well, we don't know about that. The thing is that it's either the Supreme Leader or the Guardian Council that have to make the decision whether there should be another election. And none of them have shown any sign that this might happen. And in fact, the Guardian Council announced today that in one province they did a recount and nothing new came out of the boxes. They still said the same vote was in place. The difference between these rallies and the ones in 2003 and 1999 is that those riots were mostly focused at universities. Those who were involved were university students. But these ones, you see a very broad cross-section of society coming out every day. Despite the fact that they do not have a very efficient way of communicating with each other, organizing, they have managed to attract tens of thousands of people. This happened yesterday, even though the last minute they decided to change the location of the rally. We saw that at least two lanes of Aliyah Street in a distance of about 4 or 5 miles
were packed with people who came, and they were marching in silence to show their protest. So this time it's quite different than 2003 mm-hmm. and 1999. But we don't know about the leadership of this protest this time. It all depends on Mr. Mousavi, if he would maintain the leadership of this movement.
Farida, how much do you see this as part of an international women's rights movement? I understand that that was one of Mr. Mousavi's campaign platforms, more rights for women, and that he was believed by the pre-election polls or the pre-election assessments, if they didn't have formal polls, to have very widespread support among women in Iran. Do you think that's true?
Well, it is very true in a sense that I don't know how much it relates to the international women's movement, but certainly it relates to the women's movement within Iran, which is quite strong and quite sort of demanding in a way. Maybe because the revolution sort of took away many of their civil rights. So Iranian women's movement has always been active. And also Iranian women themselves, I mean, being 65% of the university entries are all women, they constitute a very strong intellectual and voters, if you like, camp. And that is something that any reformist movement wanting to capture on that more than 50% of the vote, or probably 50, I don't exactly know whether it's more than 50% or not, but close to 50% of the votes are women vote, and it would be, I think they're responding to that demand.
Is it an urban elite versus rural, less educated kind of split, in your opinion? We see it in this country, too, where, you know, people in the more rural areas and people with lesser education are more likely to support religious right candidates, like in Iran, Ahmadinejad.
To the great measure, yes. The answer is yes. It is, as in 1979 again, a revolutionary movement that is led by the more educated and bigger city people.
So which part of the population is bigger? The more cosmopolitan, if that's the right word, or the ones who would more tend to support an Ahmadinejad position?
Well, it is, what is bigger is the city population. I mean, whether that's cosmopolitan or not, city population. I mean, Iran is no more, the statistics show that the villagers and the rural population are far smaller percentage mm-hmm. of the overall population. The supporter of Ahmadinejad are definitely women among them, too. But they tend to come from, as you said, less educated and poorer sort of section of the society, but not necessarily all from the urban areas.
Nazila Fati, New York Times reporter in Tehran. The Times reports today that during the 1999 student protests, someone's picture on the cover of The Economist magazine got them thrown in jail, held for a decade, and tortured. And incredibly, in light of that story, the Times itself has a very identifiable person in a front page picture, a Mousavi supporter at a protest yesterday. Should we fear for that person's safety, or is this time somehow different?
Well, the number of people who are protesting this time and are not covering their faces anymore, like in the previous protests, have increased a lot. As I told you, those demonstrations were limited to like 5,000 or 10,000 people. These ones are definitely beyond the tens of thousands of people. So I hope nothing would happen to that person.
And here's a way that people outside Iran can help those inside to remain anonymous to the authorities. Did either of you hear about the push on Twitter for users worldwide to change their location and time zone to Tehran in order to help hide those tweeting from there? It's a really interesting concept. Do you know about that, Nazila?
Yes. But unfortunately, Twitter and Facebook, both of them, they were being widely used by supporters of Mr. Mousavi, but both of them have been filtered here. So people cannot access them easily unless they have a kind of software to use them.
How many people do you think that might be?
not a large number. I don't believe that a lot of people are using Facebook and Twitter. And by that, I don't mean that it could be thousands of people, but not all the supporters of Mr. Mousavi who are coming out on the streets.
Farida Kouri Kamali, where do you think we'll be in a month?
As I said, it's kind of hard to know, but it all depends whether they would go with the recounting, which I actually have no idea how that would solve any issue, or they will agree to some degree of, that is also unlikely, some degree of maybe re-election. I mean, I was thinking maybe they could at least choose the four cities of the birthplace of the candidates.
And are you,
just have it.
Yes, and have the elections there?
And just have a sort of test, if you like. I mean, uh-huh. That will be. But of course, that sort of is almost it's predicted that the result would not be the same as what Ahmadinejad announced.
And in our last minute, Farida, mm-hmm. Do you think President Obama is getting it right with his cautious tone, or should he come out with more direct language, like Senator McCain? And just, you know, denounce this as undemocratic.
I actually think he has he's doing fine, because there is a great sensitivity back in Iran about the outside, especially U.S. Influencing any political movement and events in Iran. And I think there are some people asking for more, but I personally think he's doing fine by not getting too much involved.
There could be a backlash, you're saying, if he
exactly,
were to do too
exactly,
much.
Exactly, because this has been seen very much a movement from within. It is Iranian people who are directing it, and it's a fascinating aspect of it.
Farida Kouri Kamali, a professor of Middle East politics and history at the New School, Nazila Fati, New York Times reporter in Tehran. When are they asking you to leave by, Nazila? Oh, she's gone. Okay, her line is gone. Hopefully she can stay there and cover the story. Farida, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.